Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
My God, Raw and SmackDown have brand new rosters, and some of them look just about the same as they did. We're here to discuss here on the WrestleTalk podcast review of Friday Night SmackDown and AEW Collision.
The weekend update, you might
the
say.
The weekend update, yeah. Indeed. It sounds so much better than the Collide Down or SmackLision.
I think we should call it the weekend update.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am Tempest, of course. That is the truth. Dan Layton, and we are here to break down SmackDown and Collision from this past weekend. And we are going to start off with SmackDown. Not that Collision wasn't a very entertaining show. We will get to that. But there is certainly much more to talk about coming out of SmackDown. Not all of which is going to be positive, because this draft is a load of nonsense.
Yeah, I mean,
but I'll hand it over to you.
Well, yeah, Collision was a very good episode of a wrestling program that we've come to expect from Collision. And SmackDown, I was quite excited for the draft. I don't know what it is. Every single time the draft comes around, I get very into the idea of, oh, anything could happen kind of thing. And then it inevitably goes exactly the same way it always does. I find it deeply underwhelming. I think there are massive structural problems with the draft. And that's why we're leading with it, because I think we're going to have, while Collision was a good show, we're going to have a more fun conversation
yes,
about the draft.
Yes, I have some things to say.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, we'll kick off with the draft as a whole, because obviously it's spread over the course of the whole episode, but we might as well just do it all in once. So we had the draft rules. It obviously continues tonight on Raw. We'll review that tomorrow. But members of the Raw, SmackDown, and NXT rosters are all eligible. There are four rounds on SmackDown. There will be six tonight on Raw, four picks per round. Champions stay on their brand. And already for me, that is an immediate tick.
Yes, 100%. Credit where it's due. We don't have any more belt swaps to
no.
do.
And especially
thank
because
God.
They've done so much in terms of like belt design cohesion.
Mm-hmm.
I wish there wasn't red on the Raw titles, but I also don't care about that so much. It's just the Women's world title, the world title, the world tag team champs, they all look the same.
I do find it deeply hilarious that they have made this amendment to the rule as soon as they've stopped color coding their belts.
Well, I mean, it's just better.
It is better.
It's better.
It is better. But this rule was much more necessary when all your
belts
were blue and red.
Yeah.
But again, I'm not complaining.
And they were literally called the Raw and SmackDown titles. And then finally, the final rule is that the rosters will lock on May the 6th. So that's Monday, next Monday after Backlash. And then, yeah, let's just get into how it goes. Because we started the show with Paul Heyman saying that Roman Reigns voluntarily pulls out of the draft. He doesn't want to hog the number one spot while he's away. So that means that there's a new first pick, can be a new star. He sort of heavily hints that it should be Solo Sikoa.
Mm-hmm.
And then it isn't, because we go into the actual draft itself, kicking off with Triple H and Cody Rhodes reading the first picks, who are, for SmackDown, Bianca Belair and Carmelo Hayes, a call-up from NXT. And on Raw, Jey Uso and Seth freaking Rollins. Should we get into how it all went down now, or shall I do that? Like, because peppered into some of these drafts a bit of narrative
sure.
for the show.
I think we run down all the picks.
Great, we'll do that.
And just go through all of them.
Okay.
And because we can address we'll kind of what we round. Feel about certain picks and then get into more of the narrative of the show.
So really the only bit of news here is Carmelo Hayes getting called up to SmackDown officially. He's obviously been here and there on SmackDown for really the whole year. Like maybe a bit before. Time is a flat circle.
Well, he was around until he wasn't that because part. He turned heel properly on NXT and they were like, well, he was a babyface on SmackDown. This will probably be confusing, so let's take him off TV for a little bit. Mm. But in all honesty, he was on SmackDown.
Yeah, this is just a nice way to sort of make it like official draft. And I thought they made a pretty big statement with him during the show, and we'll get to that when we get there. The second round of picks were announced by Michelle McCool and Tori Wilson. Always happy to see divas of old who got a short shrift be given.
Yeah, I really enjoyed their work here on this show. I think they could have had a few pointers.
Tempest, sorry, I don't know if you know, you're not speaking into the microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is the first time I've ever done this. Talking to your mic.
Tori Wilson refused to speak into the microphone at any given moment. It's one of the, so this was an example of how the format of the draft being presented stresses me out no end, because I'm like, is there any guarantee that it's Al Pacino coming out and saying, my eyes see Braun Breaker. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know for sure that it's going to go right. And Tori not speaking into the mic had me stressed out.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see them both on the show. I keep thinking I want to see Michelle McCool have a run, like a Stratus-esque run. So I don't know on what, but I'm just into divas of old who never got the opportunity but could have gone. Like a Beth Phoenix. I think Michelle McCool is good. No, you don't agree?
I'm not a Michelle McCool fan.
All right, well, fine.
Nepo baby. Not even a baby. Nepo wife.
Nepo. But she's athletically very, very gifted.
Sure. I watched those Piggy James years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so did I. They were bad. But I would rather see Michelle McCool get another run than The Undertaker. Do you know?
Sure.
At this stage.
Sure. Why not?
At this stage is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Controversy. Anyway, they announced that on SmackDown, they pick Randy Orton and Nia Jax, our first move of the day. Nia Jax going from Raw to SmackDown. And over on the other side, Liv Morgan drafted to Raw, and Bron Breakker makes the opposite jump weeks after signing a SmackDown contract.
Yeah.
And they made a whole deal about signing the SmackDown contract.
They sure did. Now, again, there's lots of different bits to get into. I could really pick apart this draft pick by pick. And I'm going to kind of leave the, oh, well, this person got drafted before this person. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't make sense because whatever, it's wrestling. Who cares? I'm not going to come on here and harp on Nia Jax getting picked before AJ Styles when he's challenging for the title, the pay-per-view or whatever. That doesn't make sense to me, but whatever. It's wrestling. You got to try and keep the show interesting throughout. But it's S-word like this, you know? Where they really try hard to make the draft have a really like sports presentation. Mm-hmm. That you got your war rooms in the back where they're mapping out their picks, and then they pick someone and they're like, yes, we got them, and stuff like that. And then they forget about it for the other 12 months of the year.
Right.
You know, and you'll have this bidding war for someone like Bron Breakker, where everyone wants him, and oh my God, SmackDown got him. And a month later, after he's had three squash matches, he's just drafted to the other show.
Yeah.
Makes zero sense.
Yeah. Nia Jax going to SmackDown is something kind of interesting to me. I think Nia Jax has been on a really good run, and I think has pretty... Now that Rhea's out of the title picture, putting Nia in the Becky feud, given that Nia had already competed for the championship, and Becky and Nia have fought twice this year already. It was going to be too stale. I think it's a smart move to bring her over to SmackDown. And she made an impact on the show. Again, we'll get there when we do. But I think that is a good move logistically for me. Going into round three, this one was announced by the Dudley Boys. And this one is the one that's going to give Tempest an aneurysm. Uh-huh. Because after the Dudley Boys put their glasses on so that they could read the cards... hipsters of 2010, there were no glass in those frames.
Hipsters of 2000.
Yeah. The draft, it goes as follows, and I'm going to do it in the literal order. SmackDown picks LA Knight.
Yeah.
Raw picks Ricochet. SmackDown picks The Bloodline, and Raw picks Sheamus. And obviously the way the draft works in each of these, look at me, I'm half off the camera. There we go. SmackDown The way this works, we pick someone, their music plays a little bit, we get a graphic about them. One of Nia Jax's was that she's a former model.
Not Raw Women's Champion.
Yeah, or like, you know, most eliminations in a Rumble or something sure. like that. Came in number 30, returned, well, I don't know, like, whatever. Yeah. But we get that. So these segments do take a good, like, sort of 5 minutes or so, and they leave you time to digest it, and they can talk, wow, what a pick that is. They're going to be a big pick. It's just that. All four of these picks are going to their same show. So it's like saying SmackDown is going to have LA Knight. Well, we already knew that. So what was the point of drafting these people?
This draft was shambolic.
Right.
Like, I have never, ever, unless you are doing a brand new brand split, mm-hmm. like in 2016. And mm-hmm. even still, I didn't think that draft was particularly interesting. It was just more interesting than this because it was like, here are clearly defined brands.
It
just
from one roster to separate rosters.
Yes. Whereas these ones, they encounter the problem that all draft formats happen or that they have. Drafts are designed to get less interesting the further you go, mm-hmm. right? Because the most interesting people will get picked first, and therefore they will become less interesting as you go on. But if you're watching something like the NFL draft, for example, you are staying tuned in to see what your team does. Mm-hmm. That's how you hold your attention with a real life sports format. If it's just red, blue, that doesn't matter. And it makes it impossible to care about when half or more of the picks on these shows are just not moving.
Mm, right.
This format needs a complete overhaul.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate the effort of trying to make a more sports-based product because that is what I always say I want to see. But I can't see any possible upside to doing it this way over the more random draft format of like the 07 to 2011 era, because it was actually fun. You knew that it was going to be someone's going to the other show.
Yeah.
And there may have been problems with that. Why is someone trying to win a match to win a draft pick for their own brand and get more competition for them? That doesn't make sense. Whatever. I don't care. It meant that the draft picks, which is what you were tuning in to see that night, were interesting and were exciting and were suspenseful. This draft format is the opposite of suspenseful.
It feels like a spreadsheet meeting.
Yes.
And not the fun kind. And I like a spreadsheet. Tune into my GM on Parts of Unknown every Monday to see at the Monday Night War to see how fun spreadsheets can be. But this feels more like the announcement of a spreadsheet. This could have been an email. It's like, yes. Do you know what I mean? That's the whole vibe. I'll do the final few draft picks because I actually have some pitches for how it could go. And I would like to hear if you have any too as our resident North American to talk about the draft specifically because it's not something we have in this country. Mm-hmm. So I always feel like I need to get a little bit of insight. The final round of draft picks were Alpha Academy going to Raw, AJ Styles staying on SmackDown, Andrade going to SmackDown, and Kiana James getting called up from NXT, which was a massive surprise.
Sure was.
Kiana James is someone who I have a lot of time for. I think she's got a great character. I think she is very committed to the character. I like signs of what I've seen from her, but I can't say it's what I expected.
No,
going in.
Absolutely not.
You know, I was convinced Roxanne Perez was going to lose at Spring Break in last week and would get the call up if you'll... The time is right for her, especially with Rhea Ripley out of the way. But yeah, good for Kiana James, honestly.
Sure.
I guess, or maybe not, given how the women's division doesn't get, you know, a lot of cycle. And we see that with the post-show draft picks. SmackDown brings back Baron Corbin, meaning that the Wolf Dogs are not on the same show, which I think is a big mistake.
Stupid.
Yeah, I think that was your, especially because Breaker's going to Raw. Take them titles off R-Truth and also...
I would have had them two, Breaker and Corbin, win the titles off of R-Truth and The Miz the night after WrestleMania.
I am so on board with that. It's not even funny. And I think it's a... I think Baron Corbin is renewed by going down to NXT.
Absolutely.
In a massive way, but reintroducing him to the general audience of Raw and SmackDown was going to be tender because we watch so much crap. Mm-hmm. And I think the awesome truth being taken, I think the Wolf Dogs would have been the right way to bring him back to the show and make us as an audience like a general audience care about him.
Completely agree. And he's never really been in a tag team on the main roster anyway.
No.
So it would at least be fresh for the main roster audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cedric Alexander and Ashanti the Adonis get drafted to SmackDown as well, as do the OC. AJ Styles and the OC being drafted separately. Are they just officially not together anymore?
I guess.
Sure. Meanwhile, over on Raw, Alba Fyre and Isla Dawn are drafted to join the revolving door women's tag division on Raw. Ivar is staying on Raw. And then Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark are drafted separately despite currently being a tag team. But
yeah.
Fine. Whatever. So that is a whole bunch of nothing, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And when you add that to... The only real smart pick I'm looking at here is Nia Jax. And that is a logistics issue, I think, that they have made a smart choice to move her away from a division where she's already done it. Do you know what I mean? At a time when they needed to. Everything else feels narratively bland. Mm-hmm. And irritating. I'm excited to see Bron Breakker. Carmelo will get into his SmackDown day one, which I kind of had a Shelton Benjamin energy to it, I thought. But everything else just seems really like whatever. And this leads me to think, how could we do something with this draft? Because I was told last year, I learned that this is when the NFL draft happens. And obviously I watched a bit of the NFL draft this year because it's my first season. I'm going to be a Seahawks fan, aren't I?
Yes, you are.
We picked it for me. Seahawks till I die. Is that what they say?
You're the 12th man.
There it is.
The 12th Dan.
The 12th Dan.
Hey.
We love to see it. Gotta love Seattle. Anyway, I'm sort of like paying attention to that kind of stuff. I want to know more about American sports and the influence that's going to have now that we know WWE are going for that more like professional wrestling sports presentation. I just don't know that this is how it lends itself to that. And I get that they want to hype on the draft word to get that search attention, to have people come and watch SmackDown. But it's not working. If you're trying to get people to watch your show, it's the same thing with the Punk episode after Survivor Series.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to get people to watch your show, you need that show to be the best it can possibly
be
so that people will come and stick around.
I can't imagine anyone who watched this show who's like, there's a WWE draft happening. I'll tune in for the first time, you know, since Mania, but maybe, you know, I'm not a regular viewer. They have no reason to tune in next week.
Yeah, I completely agree. But I think I think what's most frustrating to me about it is that it feels like a missed opportunity.
Yes.
So I think you could do something kind of interesting with, for instance, SmackDown. If you're going to do it, SmackDown on the Friday and Raw on the Monday, SmackDown is the show where you get your NXT call-ups.
Sure.
It feels like the draft system in football that it's trying to ape brings college students, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's brand new stars going to their show. Use that to do a few NXT call-ups and have, like, I don't know, if you want to go back to the idea of the peril of the 2007-2011, it's like where there are four call-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Raw and SmackDown GMs both get to pick someone. They're going for a match. Whoever wins gets that call-up pick. Do you know what I mean? Like, have it something like that. Instantly, it feels like there's more stakes, and instantly it feels like, oh, it's going to be interesting. Who is who, if they win, are they going to pick? Oh my God, Raw won the pick. They picked Carmelo Hayes. SmackDown had Carmelo Hayes as their number one pick, so they're going to have to go back to the drawing board. They need someone else. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe on Raw, there's a pool of talent whose contracts are coming up to an end, and... you know, so to avoid the Bron Breakker having just been signed to SmackDown and now going over to Raw situation, let's say Bron Breakker wasn't eligible to be drafted this time because he just signed a SmackDown contract. But you know whose contract was coming up? AJ Styles. So Raw were really interested in bringing AJ Styles over to join them. Maybe SmackDown are like, well, we'll give you this world title shot as an incentive to sign with us. And then it becomes a contract. Maybe we'll trade you these two if you'll give us this person, things like that, where it becomes more of a, again, stakes, something interesting, rather than just picking people at an order.
So I agree with a lot of what you've said. And I think that it's not, I think the inclusion of NXT is key into doing some sort of draft system. And I mean, they tried to say, oh, well, this time NXT is going to be involved, which to me meant that they were going to get some picks and people were going to go in the direction of NXT. That was simply not true. It was just as it is all the time, that there's people in the performance center.
To play Luke's favorite part, Devil's Avocado, we don't know if maybe on NXT that someone will make an appearance
sure,
or whatever. But so we haven't seen that yet.
Yeah.
But I was the same as you. I was like, oh, NXT are going to do... No, Ava's just sat there.
Yeah.
Trick. Okay, fine.
Yeah. What I would do, potentially, and I've just had this idea, so it maybe is not like fully formed and such, but if you were to do a draft, which was far less picks, obviously, because you don't want to just flood the roster with 16 picks of NXT folk. If you had maybe 6 to 8 picks of NXT folk going to the main roster, and those are spread out throughout the show, and you combined the WWE draft with some version of a WWE trade deadline, and maybe this all doesn't work if it's a week or 2 weeks after WrestleMania, right? That maybe is not the best time in my mind to have that take place. Maybe it's, you know, just after SummerSlam, maybe it's in the fall, whatever. If you have the NXT stars coming in, but also this is the last chance you have until the next season of these contracts or whatever kicks in to make trades and to have people swap. Because throughout the year, you maybe see a Jey Uso for a Kevin Owens. But for the most part, WWE doesn't really do trades.
Yeah.
You know? And I've always thought that that should be a focal point of their brand split. You have them go and you have people negotiating. You put Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce in a room together. And then you have somebody come out and announce trades that say, oh, this trade is going to be Nia Jax for whoever went to Raw. There's like no one.
Braun Breaker. In this
Braun
instance.
Breaker. Yeah. It's legitimately
the only one.
The only one, which is appalling.
We had two NXT call-ups on the main show and two people going either side.
That's asinine.
What's the point?
But if for whatever reason, take Braun Breaker as a topical example. If you say, you know what? Raw really needs like some young blood now. We want to have a hot chip prospect come in. You've just signed this guy on SmackDown. We'll give you them, or we'll take them, and we'll give you Nia Jax and a draft pick. So SmackDown gets one of Raw's draft picks for the night because you don't need the draft pick if you're getting this young guy and such. They serve the same purpose, right? That makes sense. And you have it be this real combination sports night of it's not just this boring draft show of everybody getting redrafted to their same brands and maybe one or two people swap and maybe one or two people get called up, one of which who is already on the main roster, for being honest. But it also feeds in a little bit more of the let's get some people swapping, and you're forced to make them do swaps because that's what a trade is. I think you could do a lot with combining those two together to get the, you know, people switching brands thing, which is what the draft is supposed to be, and also the NXT call-up side of things, which is what a draft actually is. And I think it all works together a lot better under that format.
I can completely agree. I think there's so much of I think the thing that is frustrating to me is there's so much opportunity for intrigue, dramatic intrigue, right? And I think when you're talking about this stuff and it being like a whole season, we know it's coming up or whatever, having when it's like there's an England match coming up, Gareth Southgate, the manager of England, will be sat watching a Man United game to see whom he might pick as part of his team, and they'll have a shot of him. I love the idea of like Nick Aldis in the crowd at NXT or Adam Pearce in the crowd at SmackDown in one of the skyboxes making notes on certain matches and seeing, you know, just something like that. Like, again, tiny little details, which I really want to give WWE credit because they have, especially in the past few months, been those tiny little details. There has been a vast improvement. The bar was low, but there has been a vast improvement in the quality of storytelling and production.
Production, absolutely.
Yeah, and I would like to see that stretch further. I think what I find frustrating is that I don't know if these conversations are happening, right? I don't know if in the writer's room, in the creative room, they're thinking, well, we've got a draft coming up. What can we do with that that will make it interesting? What can we do that's going to make people talk? What can we do that maintains our internal logic? Because I like the draft, the brand split very much. I'm someone who's with a roster that big. I don't necessarily buy into the create your own competition thing. That's what it was when there wasn't an AEW. But now I'm more interested in keeping people fresh and cycling things out.
Keeping people apart as
well. Yeah.
If you want to have a real big match for next year's WrestleMania, for example, mm-hmm. and it's somebody who's on SmackDown and it's somebody who's on Raw, it's a lot easier to keep that match kind of fresh in people's minds, but also keep them apart from each other. And maybe they have an interaction in the Royal Rumble. Maybe they have an interaction at SummerSlam or something like that.
It's a very bad example because it didn't go well, but the Jey Uso
I was just going to bring that up.
Is actually exactly what you should do with that. He bailed on the whole job, and then they were like, well, no, we'll send you over to Raw and we'll get someone in place. Jey went off and thrived. Jimmy got sucked back into the bloodline. They met at the Rumble, and then that's what let that kept them apart. That if they told that story better and mm-hmm. had that match gone the way I think both Jey and Jimmy would rather it had gone, then they would... that would have been a prime example of exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it is something that needs a vast overhaul. And if you're going to keep it in April because that's when the NFL draft is, I get it. That's what synergy and optimization is and all of that stuff. You start with it's the whole debating facts and ideas thing. You start with that central core deadline. We've got to do that. Work backwards from there. How do we get there and what do we do with it? And I wish those conversations were taking place in the room.
I completely agree. I think I've got a few opinions and such on like the draft things that did happen that I want to rifle through quickly.
Go ahead, yeah.
I think Carmelo Hayes going in the first round is it bodes well for him. Mm-hmm. I think that shows that they look at him as a future star, which I think he is. And that gives me a lot of hope for him. However, I will have one strike against that whole section because Wade Barrett said that for the first time in history, an NXT star goes in the first round. Nuh-uh. Finn Balor went fifth overall in 2016.
He did.
You goober. That's
that one of the many false dawns we were talking about. Yeah. If you go with the Patreon and see our After Dark episode, I talked about how the draft, it has this energy, doesn't it? This idea of like, oh, something's going to happen. And that 2016, we know in hindsight it didn't change a thing, really. But that Finn Balor draft felt like it was a real statement of intent.
Mm-hmm. That was my big one.
Yeah.
It was Carmella. And I guess we'll get into the other bits because another one involves Nia Jax that I have yet to get to. But in general, yeah, boring draft, felt very pointless. I really like that Carmelo went as high as he did because mm-hmm. it gives me hope. And that's about all the good I have to say about it.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So we're getting to the show as a whole. Obviously, we have a camera over in the Performance Center for your favorite person in the world, Jackie Redmond, to get first words from any call-ups. And it turns out there was only one person who she could speak to that day. So what a waste of time. We start the show proper with a contract signing. So Corey Graves is in the ring moderating as Styles comes out to what I can only describe as the TNA version of his WWE theme.
How dare you? His TNA songs were much better than this.
You know when someone would leave from WWE and they just get a version of their theme on TNA? That's what this new Def Rebel theme feels like.
Bring back Get Ready to Fly. Cut a deal somewhere where they can actually use his TNA theme.
Cody comes out as well, so they're both in the ring. Styles talks about how they follow the same paths but never crossed before, which is true. Not as interesting. Styles respects Cody for making a name for himself outside of WWE and says that he learned a lot from Dusty Rhodes, including how to carry a championship. And at Backlash, we'll find out if Cody can carry it. Cody says he's got respect for Styles too, but when he signs the contract, this match becomes a must win. Signs it, job done. Not a big deal, really. Not a lot happened in this segment. No. But this is exactly what I think the first defense for Cody Rhodes should be. And I like the element of him talking about how it's different once you have the belt. You have to carry it. And I mentioned on the Raw After Mania that the belt looked a bit cumbersome on Cody. The more I see him with it, the more it makes sense, to the point where I'm like, he spoke, I think, on ESPN saying like he that design belt feels special to him because that's the one he was handed in the ring. And he wants to have a little run with it. And I'm like, there was that shot on last week's SmackDown of Cody after his match at the O2 calling out AJ Styles or whatever, where he had it around him, he's so sweaty. I was like, this is great. You look great with that belt. So the idea of how does he become the champion and AJ Styles being his first opponent for that purpose, I think is really smart. There was a tweet I saw that said Cody is at some point going to have to face someone who didn't meet Dusty Rhodes, and that's going to be a very tough match to promote, and I've never seen anything more true. I think this match kind of has the chance to be that because it's, you know, the whole thing about AJ knows about being champion. He held that belt for a long time. I'm really looking forward to the match.
Yeah, I think it should be really good. I'd like to really see like a motivated AJ, which I feel like we've gotten the last few weeks, especially in the triple threat match that set up his rematch with LA Knight, for example. I think the contract signing segment, I'm kind of like ready for contract signing segments to go away for a period of time, because a lot of them do just kind of feel like, yes, I respect you, or I'm going to beat you at the pay-per-view, sign. No, I'm going to beat you at the pay-per-view, sign.
The signing bit is a bit awkward as well, because it's just silent, and then they just do it. Sometimes they fumble with the pen, and like, I think for a match like this where there isn't, you know, it's this Saturday, right? There's not too much time to build a story. I get how a contract signing can be useful, but I think we do see far too many of them.
Yeah.
And they are an awkward segment.
It's weird because like it either goes this way where nothing happens in the segment besides a few little short promos, or it breaks down and someone goes through the table. And I think they're both very cliched at this point.
Yeah, they are.
I think rather see one guy cut a promo, get interrupted by the other guy, and they have a tense stare down. It just kind of feels a little bit, you know, simpler. It feels, I don't know.
Less clunky.
Yeah, a little bit. It again, was fine. I didn't come away from it frowning or anything like that, but I was just kind of like, yeah, okay, by the numbers, fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After it, AJ Styles pops off to the back while Cody says hello a lot. We have the first round of draft picks, during which time, as we've said, Carmelo Hayes is picked. Carmelo comes out and says he might as well shoot his shot on the first night of the main roster, and Melo don't miss, of course. So he goes and challenges Cody Rhodes, who accepts, and that'll be the main event of the evening. And I was really here for that. I feel like that is a statement, not only the first draft, but putting him immediately in a match with Cody Rhodes is a massive statement.
It is, and it took like the whole show really for me to, like, I got to the end and I was like, you had Carmelo Hayes losing his first show in the draft, blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, but he lost to the WWE champion.
That part.
And that's fine. Yeah. You should lose to the WWE champion. Yeah. And I was like, I just need to like get my head back in order, because we've not had a WWE champion that's wrestled on TV in years.
Yes.
And I'm wrapping my head back into like, oh, that is normal and okay.
Yeah.
So like, yes, thumbs up. But it's this weird adjustment period that I'm going through.
It's odd to have the champ there wrestling a match on television. Like even a Brock Lesnar didn't wrestle a match on weekly television. He wrestled once since like 2004 or whatever it was, and it was Kofi. It was
a squash. It was an 8-second nonsense.
Yeah, it didn't count.
Yeah.
So it is an adjustment for me. This had massive Shelton Benjamin energy. Do you remember when he was drafted in 2004, and it was like this big deal, and then that didn't go anywhere. But either way, I really liked that setting up the main event. We went to Legado del Fantasma taking on the LWO for a change. It was Humberto and Angel specifically taking on Rey and Dragon Lee, with Carlito and Zelina Vega at ringside. Decent little match, 5 minutes with a break in the middle of it. I don't think it needed it. You know WWE Speed on X?
Yeah.
Have you watched any of it?
I think I caught half of the first one where it was...
Can't even keep your attention that long.
Well, who cares is the thing. Yeah. You know, it was like Dragon Lee and Ricochet, I think, in the first one. You know, I was like, well, those are two good guys to have a quick match and everything. But like... when all your matches are less than 3 minutes, except for the main event on TV anyway, why do I need to see a show dedicated to it?
They also weren't that speedy, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's one of those things where I'm like, I actually don't mind a short match if it's here to tell the story and we're just getting on with it kind of thing. And that's what this really was, because after the match, out comes Santos Escobar to say that he's not a liar, and Electra Lopez apparently is some form of espionage agent.
Yeah, she's a sleuth.
Managed to hustle down some CCTV footage of the attack that laid out Dragon Lee before WrestleMania. And shock, horror, scandal, can't believe it, never saw this coming. It was Carlito Tempest. Mind blown.
This sucks.
Carlito, I think... spends a second considering whether or not he could possibly argue it was a deep fake.
Yeah.
Because he was just like, what do I do about this? Then hit Dragon Lee with a backstabber and legged it. I feel like we all knew this. This has taken ages. I'm excited to see Carlito be a heel. I'm excited to see Carlito do something.
I'm not.
And excited is a generous word.
Yeah. I'm not. I do not need to see Carlito in an established role of someone wrestling singles matches. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't need to see it, honestly. There's a reason why he wasn't the backup for the WrestleMania match.
Right.
Because there are many people better than him at this point. Like, I'm over the whole LWO feud thing we got going on. You do Rey and Santos in your singles match that I would have had at WrestleMania. You do that at Backlash, and everybody goes their separate ways, and that's it. Don't know if that's going to happen now. Yeah, feels like this is all going to continue on a little longer.
We're trapped in a little vortex, and I'm sort of done with it. But I'm not done with each people individually. You know, I still popped my little tits off when Rey Mysterio came out of the O2. I love watching him wrestle. I love Santos. I'm a big fan of all of the tag team elements of it.
Well,
they were the best part of the main event of the WrestleMania show.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. It's the same as last year when you had the LWO feuding with Judgment Day going into WrestleMania and the Mysterio on Mysterio violence match. I like all the people involved in that, but it's when I see it all the time for months and months. I just am ready for a reset here. Yeah. And I'm happy to see Santos get to do something else. And I'm happy that Andrade is going to be on SmackDown, because hopefully that'll be a new player in the mix here that can kind of maybe spruce up some of the singles matches.
Oh my God.
But I'm just ready for something else.
Zelina and Andrade could be back together and just let them go off and do their own thing. Like, I'm kind of done with all of this. I'm with you.
Every bit of this, and we'll get to the women's bits in a second. So much of these to me just feels like we need to get everyone back to their NXT status quo.
Right.
When all was right with the world and Triple H had his vision.
Yeah.
It took him a year to do the Sami Zayn babyface restoration project, and now he's slowly putting the pieces back for everyone else.
We're even getting a DIY split, so it's all coming. Bron Breakker took on Cedric Alexander. He hit the spear and got the win, and this recap took longer than the match itself.
Yeah.
It was really just there to remind us Bron Breakker is a thing. Then Tiffany Stratton is backstage. She tells Aldis that she should get the next women's title shot, but Nick Aldis is being a good general manager, and he takes Bailey's suggestion, and it'll be Naomi versus Tiffany for the Backlash shot that night on the show. And Stratton says she's had a Tiff epiphany. And I loved that as a sentence. I want that on a t-shirt.
Tiffany.
A Tiff epiphany.
Yeah, I guess.
Tiffany epiphany.
I guess a Tiffany is just her name.
Exactly. So it's like one of those things where at some point the portmanteau doesn't work.
Yeah.
And a Tiffany, maybe. I don't know. Either way, Bailey's going to be at ringside to watch. I like Nick Aldis as the GM. I think he's really good.
I think he's really good.
I think he's really good.
I like the bit of him showing Paul Heyman the thing in the parking lot that they recapped on this show. I was like, this feels exactly how I want my general manager, authority figure guy on a wrestling show to feel.
Yeah.
Not overshadowing the stars. He's not Stephanie McMahon going out there and belittling people. But you are not going to F around on my show.
Yes, big time. And yeah, he lays down the law and I really appreciate it.
Love it.
We had the second draft round. Then we went to the Bloodline. We had a recap of them attacking Kevin Owens. They arrive and I think the car had the child lock on because Solo took ages to get out. Eventually, Solo asks if they've been drafted yet. Heyman says they haven't, and that no one will draft them because they don't know who's in the Bloodline. Tama Tonga gets out of the car. They still refuse to tell us what MFT stands for. Any ideas?
No.
Not a clue.
Not a single clue.
My favorite Tama.
Yeah, that's genuinely it. What does NFT stand for?
Not a clue.
It's, well, I don't even know. It's that.
Most fungible Tonga.
Yeah.
And then KO ambushes Tonga and they have a big fight. I do just want to point out that Heyman said no one will draft them because we don't know who's in the Bloodline, and then they get drafted immediately. So what was that about? I the idea of like them not. What if they didn't get drafted?
Yeah, I think they tried to explain it on commentary a bit where they were like, Paul Heyman probably went immediately to Nick Aldis and negotiated this to happen immediately because he was going to be in hot water with the Bloodline otherwise. But I agree. It was a bit clunky.
Bianca Belair is in the arena and she says she's ready to win the tag titles and end Damage Control. The Kabuki Warriors come out and get in their face, but Jade cuts them off and they have a little stare down until, in the middle of them, Kevin Owens and Tama Tonga brawl into the arena. Solo joins in. Randy Orton makes a save.
I didn't particularly, it was a nothing segment at the beginning. You know, they're all having a stare down. It's fine. I really want to give props to them for the one segment leading into the next segment thing. Because for so long, this was something that we didn't see in WWE. And granted, we're getting into the point where the good production elements are becoming the norm.
Yeah, which is nice.
But it's still like, I want to give them props because for so long, it's -1, -1, -1 on SmackDowns. And I've just gone through and rewatched a lot of 2021 SmackDowns. And my God. But now it's +1, +1, +1, +1. Little add-ons that make me like the show, make me smile and just go like, oh, they did something there and it worked. Just having one segment bleed into the next, I think, just gives the whole show much more synergy, and I like that.
Completely agree. I also just like the idea that I never liked it when segments didn't recur. It was like, I'm here now, I've done my bit, and now I'm gone.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, obviously in the olden Attitude Era days, it would be like 4 or 5 segments of Stone Cold backstage, and I kind of like that, and I miss that, and it's something that interconnectedness feels like a part of that, and I appreciate it. We had the third round of the draft. Then Tiffany Stratton versus Naomi happens. Bailey's on commentary. Naomi starts fast. They trade control for a second. Stratton ends up on the outside. Naomi does a big old trademark Naomi split dive that sends us to the break. Stratton gets a 2 for a spinebuster. Naomi manages to get one of her own from her heads as a takedown. They're going back and forth, and it's fine at best, I'll be honest. But then new SmackDown star Nia Jax jumps Bayley. Naomi goes for the save, but gets rammed into the post for a DQ. Jax leaves, destruction in her wake, and Tiffany hits the prettiest moonsault ever on both Bayley and Naomi, and we are getting a triple threat match at Backlash.
So I thought this was a very effective segment.
Yeah.
For a number of reasons. One, I think we all kind of figured that it was going to be a triple threat given how the last few weeks have played out. And we got there and it worked and they did it in a way that wasn't, oh, they did a double pin or a double whatever. It was somebody coming in and screwing with them. So it's a little different. I like that. In addition to that, I don't know how many pay-per-view cycles we can make it through before we then need to get to a Bayley and Nia Jax match. Because there are a lot of pay-per-views between now and, you know, SummerSlam, for example. We'd have to get through Money in the Bank, and we need to get through King and Queen of the Ring, and we need to get through Bash of Berlin, I believe. That might be after SummerSlam. I can't remember. There's a lot.
It is, yeah.
But I would probably have that be the SummerSlam match.
Bayley and Nia.
Yeah. Because, and this is, again, me getting back to everything must be the NXT status quo, I still think one of the best portrayals of both Bayley and of Nia Jax comes from their TakeOver London feud and match.
I agree.
And they never got it right on the main roster, shocker, but they never got a lot of things right with all of this on the main roster either. Like, you know, you look at Nia Jax and Asuka, for example. They have their match in NXT at TakeOver, and it's like, it's pretty good. And Asuka's this badass, and she puts Nia Jax, the big monster, down. And then they have the same match at, I believe, Fastlane 2017 on the main, or no, it was 2018. after Asuka had won the Royal Rumble. And it's just Nia Jax beating her up for 8 minutes and then Asuka like gets a roll up or something like that, right? It's not the same.
No.
And you go back and you have like a proper David and Goliath, you know, monster versus underdog babyface match. And if you really want to get Bayley back to not necessarily the hugger character, but that kind of beloved underdog character that she was years ago, you need to do it over the course of time. And I think a great big obstacle to have at a big show would be Nia Jax. And she's proven that she can have a decent match this year. She's definitely come a long way than where she was previous. I just think it all kind of works.
Yeah.
It was clicking for me. And when I saw Nia Jax's face pop up, I was like, oh, joy. Get to see Nia Jax on SmackDown. And then I actually saw what they were doing, and I was like, you know what? I'm with it.
But this is what kind of to the point you were making earlier on. I did this, what was it last week on? Oh, it was the Battle Royal. I did the same thing where I was like, oh, Jesus, we're doing a Battle Royal. And I kind of forgot that we're dealing with a different team now in many aspects. So, but you can't really blame us for being kind of sour on potential ideas and what we're seeing, because for so long, we as a collective audience have put up with such crap that actually it's only recently things have started to get good again. There were moments of good all over the place, but it takes a second to get out of that mindset.
Yeah.
The same tip with getting Cody being a fighting champion. We're so stuck in a certain way of thinking that actually Nia Jax being good again is a nice change.
Mm-hmm.
And so her popping up on SmackDown is a good thing in a way that in maybe literally 2020, it wouldn't have felt as, you know, positive. We go backstage, we get the Street Profits and B-Fab having a little conversation. They're ready to win the tag team championships next week. Meanwhile, A-Town Down Under come in and make sports jokes, and then they get scared off by Bobby Lashley, and they all just sort of yell for a while. That was a lot of noise. For me, it was like 2:30 in the morning when that was happening, so it was too much noise. And then the final testament, Karrion Kross yells at us, more noise, and he drags the camera off where we find they've been attacking the New Catch Republic, and Kross promises to continue violence until they get what they want. It's just, what is that exactly?
We've never known.
We've never known. From the second Karrion Kross came back, which, look, with atmospheric and all the stuff, and I'm into Scarlet with a little time turner, but what do you want?
Don't know.
What do you want? What's your motivation? I'd like a motivation, because I don't hate this as much as everyone else does. I just find it dull. So, give me motivation and we'll talk. Fourth round of the draft. That's where Kiana James gets called up. She gives an interview with Jackie, kind of out of character in a way. Good for her. HBK comes up. They don't make a massive deal of it, but it gives her, I assume, a few words of encouragement, or maybe he just tells her to hail Hydra. Either way, Kiana James will be maybe a showcase on Raw on Monday or post-draft.
Sure.
Then we move into the main event. It's Carmelo Hayes versus Cody. They start grappling for the upper hand, and Carmelo goes for a springboard, but no dice. You're in the big leagues, kid. Carmelo hits a chop, smacks Cody in the face. He's got all that sort of young gun arrogance. And this is kind of what I liked about it, because it very much gave the impression that Carmelo knew he had nothing to lose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he loses the match, he's lost to the champion. No biggie.
Yeah.
Cody gives him a few hard chops as receipts to kind of show his sort of dominance. You can see him calling a few spots, and I felt like Melo's sort of meeting the moment. There's a heads as a facebuster, follows up with a beautiful fadeaway DDT that Cody sold hard. Cody hit a disaster kick and turns Melo inside out for a two count. Then we get to the main bit that sort of worries me.
Mm-hmm.
Because Cody hits a cutter for another two. And Barrett says, how many people have you seen put away with that move? And honestly, not loads. So maybe a few.
I was hoping you'd bring that up.
Like, I don't honestly think that anyone I've seen pinned by the Cody cutter.
It's like, yeah, it's like when they were like, huh.
Except when someone, it was the 1D.
Someone kicked out of the Matt Hardy side effect. How many people have you ever seen? All of them.
Yeah. I feel like there should be a movement in wrestling as a whole for signature moves to sometimes put people away.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We see kickouts of finishes all the time. We never see someone... Like, there was a moment where Drew McIntyre won with the DDT. I can't remember what it's called. What he calls
it? The Future Shock?
That one, yeah. And I was like, oh, sick. Okay. Every now and again, that should happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway. So they've set up the springboards. They each have a springboard move or two in their arsenal. And the final sort of go-home spot is that there's this weird double springboard thing They both leap off and miss each other. And Cody lands on his arm, and I have frantically Googled all weekend, and I can't find anything to say it's fine or it's injured. But it looked like a hard landing. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if this was supposed to work or not. I've watched it so many times, and I still can't work it out. I'm erring on the side that this was a botch because they've set up both of them doing their springboard moves.
I thought this was the planned spot.
Interesting, because I thought maybe the idea was that Melo was going to go for a dive, Cody catches him midair, it's a great moment and it's a massive thing and that's what knocks Melo out and it's a real statement of intent. We get the viral moment that they're so desperate to find. But in the end, if it is a F-up, Melo doesn't really give the game away. He goes right back over to Cody, who looks like he landed hard, and Cody hits the crossroads for the win. So if it wasn't a botch, Melo showed that if it was a botch, Melo showed that he handled it really well. If it wasn't a botch, what was it?
I think it was just them being like, we're the same. They both go for a drop kick at the same time and then do a pose, but it's with their springboard signatures. And I think it just was an ill-advised idea. I think it looked very stupid.
It looked very silly indeed. But yeah. I enjoyed what the match did for Melo. And I think it was good. I like that it, you know, sends Cody off for a win off to France. He's on the plane probably now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe going to go get some escargot. There's a few nice patisseries in Paris. No idea about Lyon. They're not the same place, but yeah. They'll tell us they are. So, yeah. I thought the show was bad.
Yeah. It can have some good things on it. There were some aspects of SmackDown that I enjoyed that we've gone over. But as a draft episode, I think it failed at that.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So with that being said, we will switch gears now, head over to AEW Collision, which I thought was quite a good show, honestly. Some ups and downs, but more ups.
What's that?
Give it up. It gets it down. Here's why.
Oh, I see what you're doing.
Anyway.
Very good.
So this show, April 27th episode of AEW Collision, opens with Swerve Strickland coming down to the ring with Prince Nana and giving his world championship address. Now, there were a lot of people this past week kind of talking about, why did Swerve only wrestle a match in the second segment of Dynamite after winning the title and not say anything and whatever? And we come to find out it's because Collision was supposedly going to have a really good first quarter hour because they were coming in after basketball playoffs and things like that. I get it. I do hear both parts of it.
I'm on the side of he felt like a mid-carder on Dynamite.
Yeah, it was a little dissonant. I would even maybe have just not had him on that show and had this be his first appearance.
Make a hype out of it, make a point of it.
For sure. But he came out. He was here, Jacksonville at Daly's place, and he comes out, he makes his address, and talks about a number of things, talks about the week that they've had, Willow Nightingale wins the championship, Adam Copeland gets misted, the Young Bucks and Jack Perry take out Tony Khan, and he says, among a number of other things, that was a bitch move. So, I could definitely see, maybe not a pay-per-view, maybe a TV main event, them doing a Swerve versus Jack Perry title defense, you know, in the next few months, at least. But seemingly picked a fight with the EVPs and the Elite. So that's an interesting development.
As the champ should with the main event stars of the show.
Like, yes.
You know, Jack Perry is one of the most talked about people, certainly in that company, if not in wrestling overall, like for good and bad. The champ should be involved in that.
Absolutely.
This was something I had a frustration with when they had MJF as champ. He wasn't around the main event scene. He had his own separate thing, and it was frustrating me. So I like this. This is good.
I agree. And then he says that, you know, he's your new AEW World Champion, and he's holding this belt, and he is going to give a shot to somebody tonight. He also talks about how his oldest daughter congratulated him and, you know, said that, you know, she was proud of him, but that she didn't know him. And this really, like, touched him, and that he feels bad for missing all the birthdays and basketball games and such. But he's doing this to provide a better life for him and his family. And I know you're smiling.
Wrestling's so weird, man. Let me tell you why. I'm smiling because this was lovely. I'm into this. This promo was great. That little speech was nice. It's a way to get behind Swerve as our babyface champion. Like 2 weeks ago, he was making Nick Wayne bloody as all hell.
You say 2 weeks ago.
It was basically like, it happened yesterday.
Like, it was like 9 months ago.
It's just one of those things. I remember sitting on this review of Collision and talking about this incredibly effective segment that made me think that, like, Swerve is a cold-blooded killer and an awful person. And here he is being like, yo, Adrian, we did it, kind of thing. I'm like, and Nick Wayne is the one I hate now. Yeah. What's that about?
It's
like,
all backwards.
Wrestling is mad.
It works. It works.
It does. I mean, that's not a criticism.
Yeah. So he says that he's going to give an open challenge for the belt tonight, and who's going to answer it but Claudio Castagnoli, which is a very exciting prospect, who comes down. They have a quick little interaction in the ring, and Claudio says, you're on, and Swerve says, whose house? And then Claudio grabs the mic out of his hand. He said, it's going to be mine. And they go their separate ways.
So first of all, I really love this as a match. I think this is the perfect first defense. In the same way, people hate it when we do comparisons, but this is the Weekend Update show, so we're allowed to. The same way that AJ Styles is the perfect first defense for Cody.
Yeah.
This is the perfect, well, it wasn't the first defense, obviously, but it was a great first proper challenge for Swerve, I thought. And I would have agreed. I would have saved it. I wouldn't have had him wrestle on Dynamite. This also really smartly set up something that's going to be a thread through the whole show. Or at the very least, it opened and bookended the show.
Right.
We'll get to it when we get there, but it was really nice and I liked it a lot.
So we had an update on Tony Khan's medical condition, and they basically said that he was around AEW this week because the NFL draft and he was in Jacksonville and such, but he's not been cleared to travel. So when they go to Winnipeg next week, he will not be there. He will be running AEW remotely. And Nigel says, well, what does that mean? Who's going to be running AEW? Well, presumably these EVPs. And Tony Schiavone is upset about it, but it does give this idea that AEW might kind of have a martial law kind of like, oh, the outlaws are running the show type thing. And it works. Obviously, EVPs and such has been their character. But heel authority figures is something we've not seen in AEW. And this is them going full bore with it to an extent we've not seen yet. So that's interesting.
What did you think of the segment on Dynamite?
I thought it was silly, wacky wrestling fun.
Yeah.
You know?
That's where I was at.
Yeah.
Just while Tony's not allowed to travel, if he could look for some acting classes in Jacksonville, I'm really
sure. But I mean, I've seen him try and do the Daniel Garcia dance.
I think he's reached his ceiling.
He's
got no, like,
I'm not gonna hope for Tony Khan to give me something I know Tony Khan don't got.
Yeah, it's expecting something that he can't bring. Yeah, that's absolutely fair. No, I also really like Tony Schiavone giving this kind of like cross teacher energy right at the beginning of this segment, where he was like, which kind of adds into the whole business of the face he was pulling after the All In footage, which, you know, people read. If we're taking him by his word, they read the wrong way. I really liked what he was giving in the segment. And it's that kind of like, what's that going to look like? Oh, also Kenny Omega's going to be on Dynamite this week. What's that going to look like? I'm into it. And it's really nice to have a hook.
Yeah. Well, there's always a hook. Maybe not this week.
No, it's not, because he's been injured. He got hit in the head by a baseball bat.
Yeah, anyway. We had a unified Trios Championship match as the Bang Bang Gang, a Switchblade, Jay White, and the Guns took on Action Andretti and Top Flight. And this was, you know, a probably 6-7 minute title defense match on TV. I thought it was perfectly fine. Yeah. You had your Top Flight high flying stuff. And on the other side, you had these really fun ass boys segments who honestly have come a long way. And I can't believe at the end of this that I preferred them over the Acclaimed, but I guess that I have, but we'll get to that. Turns out it was only a 3 minute match. So never mind. My goodness.
Was it?
Yeah, supposedly, the Guns hit Darius. Oh no, that's the name of the move. 3:10 to Yuma. I just read that as they beat him in 3 minutes, 10 seconds. I was like, it felt longer than that.
That's funny.
Losing it. But regardless, this was a fine little title defense. Yeah. I thought this was very reminiscent of the tag team title matches we used to get on Rampage, for example, when you'd get like either the Young Bucks or the Lucha Brothers against like Alex Reynolds and John Silver, where you know the title's not going to change hands, but it's good to have some gold on the line on the TV show with so many belts, and you know, wins help put your champions over. So
yeah.
thumbs up for that.
I'm so glad that they're away from the mire of the Acclaimed stuff, which has got a dark cloud over it at the moment for me. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's a good presentation of the Bang Bang Gang. I'm into it. I liked it a lot. It was good.
I agree. Backstage in their void, we had the House of Black saying that somebody, one of them, is going to be challenging Adam Copeland for the TNT title on Wednesday in the Cope Open, but he's not going to know until the world finds out when one of them comes down. I'm hoping it's Brody King, because I think that would be the match I'd most be excited about at this juncture. They've had the most interaction to this point so far, so I think that makes sense.
Do you have King win?
Probably not.
No.
I think Cope still got a while left to go with this, but at some point I want to see Brody King with a title. That'd be fantastic. And then, holy smokes, we had Rey Fénix making his return against the Beast Mortus.
You know, like in early Raw, that guy with the, was it Mantor?
Sure, yeah,
this guy's
yeah.
like Yassified Mantor.
Yeah,
I loved every second of this presentation.
So for anybody, and granted you might not know who this is anyway, but the Beast Mortus is the redone up Black Taurus, who is a lucha star who's been all over the shop for the last few years. I don't know if he's going to find a more permanent home in AEW. I'd certainly like that after this match, because this match was so baller.
Yeah,
this was awesome. An amazing little TV match. And having Rey Fénix play the role of underdog luchador who gets the win in the end is surprisingly something we've not really seen from him a lot, because he's just not won as many singles matches, particularly against bigger guys. But this was one of them. And they had this awesome like back and forth where Mortis was still doing the lucha spots. Like he was doing the handsprings off the ropes. He was doing the rollovers on the back and doing arm drags and everything. And he was keeping up with it. And it was so exciting because, again, the pace was really quick, but Rey Fénix just couldn't get Mortis off his feet because he's so big. He's got this awesome like bull mask. It was, you know, fantastic presentation. Eventually, Rey Fénix goes for a springboard and Mortis just speared him out of midair.
That was my spot of the match. I loved
it. It was gorgeous. Absolutely phenomenal. And it's still only just for a near fall. And I can't say enough good about this. Ultimately, Rey Fénix hits a frog splash and gets a near fall, but Rey Fénix then rolls up Mortis and pins him.
Yeah.
I want to see this match over and over again.
Yeah,
this was so much fun.
Look, if you want to bring Rey Fénix back and show him off like this, it's the way to do it.
Yep.
And clip this out. I love athletic big men. It's my favorite thing.
Yeah.
So I feel like this was a really good showcase of kind of what Collision has always been, which is the tune in on a Saturday night. There's a really good wrestling match on telly.
Mm-hmm.
It's got no heat. Doesn't need any heat because the heat is Rey Fénix is back and he's wrestling someone who's bigger than him and can still do all the things that he does.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge. You know, I loved it. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. They gave everything. It was a bit scrappy at the beginning, but as expected when you're returning, I think. Yeah, I was a massive fan of it. And the CMLL Lucha influx has not been massively successful in terms of consistency and narrative, but this is what it's for.
Yeah.
Giving me a banger on television that I enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, it was like you said, this is kind of to me what Collision was, even early on.
Yeah.
You know, when you were getting a lot of those kind of, you know, not necessarily really story-driven matches, and maybe this will develop into something, but you're going to go and see a great match. And this to me is a type of match that you show it to any live audience and it will get over in front of them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's impossible not to get into it.
It's just impressive. Do you ever watch the gymnastics? And this is not me saying like comparing like a Jim Cornette energy that I'm not going down. But do you ever watch like the gymnastics of the Olympics?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Olympics of the summer, I'm going to watch the ever-living crap out of that because it's impossible to not be impressed by athletic feats.
Yeah.
And it's one thing to watch some really interesting technical wrestling that draws you in like that. This is a showcase. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You can't help but pop for this. So.
Yeah. That's why I always say, like, lucha, when done at the highest level, is probably the most entertaining form of pro wrestling.
Yeah.
It's the also most, the easiest wrestling to mess up and do badly.
Yeah,
It's a double-edged sword there. Next up, we had the return of Roosh taking on Martin Stone, who's just a job guy. And sure enough, he beat him quickly, hit the bull's horns in the corner with a dropkick, and that was it. He'd whipped him on the outside with the TV cables, and that was that. Easy night of work. Not much to say to it. I like Roosh. I'm happy he's back.
I love Roosh. Yeah, squash, whatever. Yeah. But it was I love Roosh, so there you go, fine.
Yeah. We had Serena Deeb backstage say that she is going to win the Women's World Championship, tells Tony that this isn't a movie and that this is real life. I assume this is going to be the match for Double or Nothing. Yeah. I'm sure it's going to be really good.
Yeah, oh, it's going to be exceptional.
Yeah.
Do the match, because I've got things to say.
So this then led into the women's match of the show being Toni Storm versus Anna Jay, and this match got a "This is awesome" chant from the crowd, and Toni Storm was being Toni Storm. Her offense was a lot of ass based offense, you know, hit Anna Jay with her bum over and over again. They did some spots on the outside where Anna Jay wiped out Mariah May, and that distracted Toni Storm, and she was like, oh, sweet baby. And she went to go get back in the ring, and she was kind of hung up with a neck breaker through the ropes. But ultimately, she powered out of Anna Jay's Queen Slayer when she had it on, got her in the corner, hit her with the hip attack, and then hit the Storm Zero and got the win.
I want to get the critique out of the way so that I can put over what they're doing at the moment, because this was the only women's match on the show. This was the only women's segment on the show, really, and it, including Serena, that's one segment. That's the template at this point. Again, we can only expect them to do a certain thing. That being said, it's been my critique of the AEW women's division that they don't care for a really long time. And even in recent history, they haven't really done much with it. It hasn't been a very good job. What I saw on Dynamite and what I saw here, I thought were really, really effective and have me genuinely very excited about the women's division in AEW. I think the segment on Dynamite with Willow and Mercedes was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I think Willow in particular is an absolute superstar. I think the business about being unsure whether or not she would have beaten a full strength Mercedes and that she feels guilty and she had the belt, but she still didn't feel legit with it. Then the admittedly WWE style, Chris turns around. Mercedes can't just go and check the footage and make sure that she and apologize to Willow for slapping her unnecessarily. She probably won't. But I liked that still. I liked that as part of a storyline. I thought when Mercedes got in her face, that was really exciting as well. And then everything that we saw on Dynamite with Tony and even Serena touching the belt and then sitting down and saying, that's the last time I'm touching that, was really great.
Mm-hmm.
Leading into this match here, I thought it was great. I thought Anna Jay and Tony did a fantastic job. I thought the little character details that we've got with the addition, her name is escaping me. It's absolutely
Mina Shirakawa.
Thank you very much. Almost like turning Mariah's head a little bit, remember us kind of thing. And Tony coming out and making the big babyface save on Dynamite. And then here in this match, if you look at it, yes, Anna Jay crumples into Mariah May, but it's as a result of a Toni Storm baseball kick.
Mm-hmm.
So Mariah's like, you didn't take care of me, maybe. She could play with that somewhere. There's a lot of little details here that I really appreciate. I think Anna Jay did a fantastic job in both matches, holding her own in the segment and not having it be any other person, I thought was really effective. I really like what they're doing with the women's division, and I really want to give them credit where it's due.
I really enjoy everything Toni Storm and Mariah May have going on with one another. And I think there is a very simple but very good story to be told with just, you know, Toni Storm cares about Mariah May, sure. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, she's like, I'm the star. And oh, my adoring fan. Oh, you're so cute. And then as soon as she's like, oh, I'm going to turn my attention somewhere else for a moment, she's like, no, me. Yeah. Me.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot you can do to play with that eventually down the line with whatever climax we're building towards with Toni Storm and Mariah May. I think there's a lot to play with.
It's one thing to make a statement and say, we've signed Mercedes Moné, this women's division, I'm going to take this Evolution global and all that stuff. It's a whole other thing to actually execute it. And they have started, even back to, like, you know, the promo Toni Storm cut on Thunder Rosa before Dynasty.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to walk the walk, and I appreciate it, and I want to give them credit.
Yeah. I agree. We then had the AEW debut of the Grizzled Young Veterans, James Drake and Zach Gibson, who took on the Acclaimed of Anthony Bowens and Max Caster. Max Caster does his rap. He makes a joke about doing it in the butt, and I just kind of rolled my eyes.
I mean, it was the least offensive thing he's done for a while. So.
Yeah. So this was a very interesting match because, as far as I know, Grizzled Young Veterans are not signed to AEW. And despite that, they are a fantastic team. Always wanted more from them, not from them, for them, in NXT, for example. I thought that them and MSK were lining up to be the next DIY and revival
feud,
right? And it never really got there. But these guys are that really smart heel team that's able to bend the rules and skirt around and do different things and are very technically sound. And I really, really enjoy that. This match featured a lot of that. It featured a lot of the Grizzled Young Veterans just being awesome and doing double team moves that you maybe hadn't seen before, where they hit like a lung blower, code breaker type move in the corner. And then the other one, I always get them mixed up. James Drake does a big coast to coast drop kick from one side to the other while they've still got him, you know, neck pressed against the knees. It's really, really good stuff. Billy Gunn starts getting worked up on the outside and such. And eventually this match just kind of turns around and the Acclaimed win.
Mm-hmm.
They hit their series of moves in a row and they get the win.
Mm.
And I don't know what it was about it. Maybe I was just, you know, really trying to be hopeful that they would win and then get the All Elite graphic or something pop up behind them. But it's a weird situation right now because I personally am not that into the Acclaimed at this juncture for a number of reasons. I don't like Billy Gunn. Don't like what he's done. Don't like what he did with Jay White. I've been over Billy Gunn for a long time. I'm also over Max Caster for a lot of reasons, most of which are related to Twitter and such. But I was really hoping that Anthony Bowens would turn on them and go with Bullet Club Gold. Because to me, he's the breakout star of this group by far. He's the best wrestler of the group by far. I think he's got the most high-end potential, the highest ceiling. And he's the only one that I like in this babyface group.
Yeah.
And I was saying to Ollie in the office before we came and did this podcast that to me right now, the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass are like this era of AEW's version of SCU in that they, in my mind, are a really solid open the show act where they come out and they do their rap or their catchphrase or whatever. And everyone goes, yay, this is the worst town I've ever been in. Hooray, SCU. They do their song and dance thing. Or in this case, they do your scissor me daddy ass thing. But at a certain point, SCU stopped being able to like credibly beat some of the other teams they had coming in, you know, where it just didn't quite make sense to have SCU beating the Young Bucks or beating the Lucha Brothers or beating Kenny Omega and Hangman Page. And then you kind of saw them disappear into the background a little bit. Now, I would have handled SCU a lot differently if I was AEW. That's another thing. But I think it applies to the Acclaimed as well, where I really struggle, and I think this is the problem with their tag team reign to begin with, is I really struggle when I see them being put on the same like level of credibility as an FTR, as a Young Bucks, as these other like really top level tag teams, because they are just kind of these goofy guys. And you can be goofy and still credible and really good, but they've never gone all the way with them in that sense. Like, they never faced the Young Bucks and won. They never faced FTR and like just beat them clean. The one time they wrestled, I think they beat FTR with a roll up, for example. Like, it was like, ooh, and they got them. They've never been portrayed in AEW as this tag team that is equal to or on the same level as all these other teams. So they've just kind of been sat kind of in the middle of the pack in my mind. And then they go and they beat Grizzled Young Veterans. And I'm like, there's some sort of dissonance to this to me.
I got it completely the same. I was thinking, are you really going to pin Grizzly Young Vets? Mm-hmm. Like, you made such a big deal about them being there. Everyone was so excited. And like, you, okay. Like, I and it was twice it happened in the match. There was a near fall. And then I thought, oh, I was wrong. And they're going to get that. Oh, no, they're not. Oh, and it's going to be Billy Gunn as the difference maker. Okay. I liked the match.
Yeah, I thought the match was really fun, really good.
I think, and I also was there at the genesis of Collision, and we were literally in the building for All In, where they won the trios titles, and it felt cool and fun, and I had a good time with it. Like, it was the fake out retirement of Billy Gunn. I don't know. I liked, and there was the bit, and again, singling out Bowens for praise, he would always go for the scissor meet, and then but Daddy Ass was no longer there. So he sold that really well. I was into it. And now, as a result of various, and yeah, I can't, you know, maybe unfair, maybe not unfair. I can't look past Max Caster being a bit of a prick, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not working for me anymore, the Acclaimed. Yeah. It's done. And I think this would have been a good opportunity to do two things. You know, put Grizzle Young Vets over. I get you don't want to put unsigned talent over your talent, but also if you're going to use that to give your talent something to sink their teeth into, then maybe you do.
Yeah.
And maybe you show goodwill to the Grizzle Young Vets and say, come back to us at some point and we'll do business together. It just was an odd feeling. I'm with you completely. And I'm ready for Anthony Bowens, who I think has not only an incredible look, but an incredible story. And I think he's a great hand, a great talent. I'd like to see him get given something else now that this is decidedly stale.
I completely agree. But this leads us to our Collision main event, that being for the AEW World Championship, Swerve Strickland making the defense against Claudio Castagnoli. And my goodness, what a main event match they had. I think this went like 21 minutes, something like that. This was a fantastic little match.
It was
a really, really good main event. They did a lot of really fun kind of, I will always put over Swerve's movements in the ring. He's very fluid, very smooth. And I think that lends itself very well to someone working with Claudio, who can do anything in the ring and is I don't know if there is a better base out there for anybody who's kind of flying around than Claudio. So they work together really well. Swerve does like this moonsault deal off of the stage area, yeah, Daly's place.
Loved that.
Which was fantastic. They get back into the ring. They do a lot more like really cool, you know, just either high flying, or Claudio does the swing and he swings him for like forever and puts him in the sharpshooter and really gets into the sharpshooter looking like, and you don't think Swerve's going to tap out or anything. But I was like, hey, that would beat a normal man for sure. They keep going. The spot that went around Twitter for me was when he, being Swerve, went for the stomp on a standing up Claudio, and he went to do the stomp and he just landed on Claudio's shoulders and Claudio didn't budge.
Oh, jeepers.
And Claudio kind of like pushes him off and hits an uppercut on Swerve on the way down for a near fall. One of the damnedest things I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely phenomenal. Claudio kicked out of the Swerve stomp at a point as well. And eventually, Swerve was able to put him down, hit the house call, and get the win with it. So if that, I don't know, the house call is considered a signature. Mm-hmm. or it's kind of like a half finisher. Sometimes it beats people, sometimes it doesn't, which I guess is kind of what we were talking about earlier.
Completely.
Like a signature slash finisher.
You should have a handful of moves that you can go to put people away so that when they don't put people away and you look at the ref like, how did that not work? I don't go, well, it's never worked before, you dickhead.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, you're absolutely right. And the show went off the air with Swerve holding up the belt, and it was really good. There were also a couple segments in there of best friends doing best friend stuff.
I loved this match. Thought it was absolutely fantastic. I thought it was everything a first defense like this should be to set up Swerve as the champ. I also loved the fact that I didn't think that Claudio was going to win, but I did think that Claudio was going to win, if that makes sense. Like, he in the course of the match, I know logic. My logic brain says they're not going to get rid of Swerve's win that quickly and just on an episode of Collision. Certainly not. But my fan emotional investment brain saw some near falls and went, oh, you might. You might take this. Like, I couldn't, and I think that's really to its credit. I was kind of sour on the look of Daily's Place this week overall. I think Daily's Place is like hallowed ground.
Was it the stage?
Yes. It was
needs
the,
a tunnel.
It was the LED lights.
Yeah, it needs a tunnel.
So the only reason I'm bringing it up is because obviously they used it as part of the match, which, you know, when Swerve jumps up, I'm like, oh my God, sick. I was so excited. But I wanted to say that on Dynamite, I can't take credit for this. It was Cedric over at Watch Culture who said, it looked like they were wrestling in a lava lamp at certain points. And I can kind of see the point. I think of Daily Space as very special territory, and the way it looks always feels really unique. And I just thought it looked ugly. It lost some of its aura. It lost some of its specialness to me. On Collision, I didn't feel as much that way. So I think it's just look at what you're doing with the big, giant LED screens. I think something that we see that now WWE are lowering some of their production costs. Their stage is much smaller. And I actually like it more. You always talk about wanting something between grainy footage and high definition.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. That was just in my head because they used it in the match. The other thing that I really want to look at and have a quick conflab about is that before the show goes off the air, Claudio goes over and sort of shakes Swerve's hand, says something, and points over at Nana.
Mm-hmm.
And Swerve kind of takes it on board, not goes, yeah, all right, I'll think about it, but just kind of like hears him and like something goes on in his head. That combined with the thing that happened at the beginning where he's going, whose house? Is really interesting to me. Now, I was going to talk to you about this off air because I didn't want to get, you know, too many people saying I hate fun. Now that kind of annoys me.
Wow.
I don't really like the dancing. I don't really like the theme. I'm very alone in that and I appreciate that. But I also don't like whose house for me, it's like any football chant, know when it's over, right? There's always people who take it one or two steps too far.
Sure.
Nana does Whose House, Whose House for ages and ages and ages, and I find it distracting and annoying. That's a very personal response. That's not me saying that that is the way it's coming across. But it was interesting to me then that we as analysts and critics and all the rest of it, we have our things that are our things and we don't necessarily bring them up. And that's why I wasn't going to bring it up. But it was only because Claudio directly pointed at Nana and almost inferred from that, he's saying like, maybe move on from the dancing man.
Mm-hmm.
I found that kind of interesting as a little story point. They didn't make a big deal out of it on the commentary.
It was subtle.
But it was there.
Yeah.
And it was there when they did the Whose House and he took his mic away. What do you think's going on there?
I'm glad you brought that up because I'd forgotten to mention it. I mean, I do not feel the same way regarding Nana or the song or the dance or any of that.
And I'm fine with that.
I'm all in on all that. Whose House is a cool chant to me. I like that.
It is a cool chant. It's not that it's not cool. It's that it goes on too long sometimes and it distracts.
That's fair. But that's also North America and chanting.
Yeah, I'm
such.
Sure they don't like it when we sing.
Sure. But I will say that I have been wondering for a while what the follow-up is going to be with the Mogul Embassy, for example, because we've not seen Swerve interact with, you know, the Gates of Agony or Brian Cage or anything like that in quite a while. And to me, this little ending segment did sort of feel like, hey, you know, watch out for that one. I meant to look up to see if Nana and Claudio had like an extensive history at all in Ring of Honor.
Oh, interesting.
and if this was kind of like a warning or something like that. I didn't get a chance to do that before we came down here, but it did sort of feel just like a keep an eye on that one.
That's interesting.
You know, a real subtle thing that I don't know which direction they go with any of that, but in my mind where I'm like, I feel like they don't do those sort of things for no reason in AEW. Similar like weeks and weeks ago when we brought up how Bryan Danielson had a little bit of a go towards Nigel McGuinness, like during a match, like kind of just stepped to him and Nigel just did that. Mm-hmm. And that was like the first time it ever went the other way. And it was like, that's interesting. That's not for no reason. They're having a match at Wembley. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know that's going to happen by any means. But
please.
Please. But it was that same sort of feeling where it was like, okay, they've chosen to do that. Why?
And I love that you've got an alternate read on it to me. I like that, like, you know, again, I can't stress enough my own prejudices, but like, I love that I thought maybe it was you're better than this circus. And for you, it was like, watch out for him.
Mm-hmm.
I love that it could be read anyway. I think that's absolutely fantastic.
It'll be really interesting to continue to look into because, again, Swerve's going to need challengers going forward, maybe TV challengers, maybe bigger than that. And I think Brian Cage on TV could be a really cool, you know, match if they wanted to split Swerve properly from the Mogul Embassy. And whether or not they want to split him up from the guy that does the dancing that everybody gets into in the crowd, I don't know.
The idea that the Combat Club are purists.
Sure.
I suppose.
Right. Yeah.
That's kind of why it was in my head. But then maybe what you do with that is you have Swerve think about it and then go, nah, Sajid, this is well better. Like, you know.
Yeah.
It's subtleties again in the same way in the women's division. I appreciate it. I think credit where it's due. What I've always said when AEW has been in its worst positions is let it be what it is. Let AEW be AEW. And it's things like that they do so well. I thought this was a brilliant episode.
I thought this was a really fun episode of Collision. There were only like a few small things that I might not have loved as much as the others. And it was like one of their contracted teams beat a non-contracted team. So it's not even really a problem with it. It's just like I want Grizzled Young Vets to be signed. But yeah, overall, I thought this was a really good episode of Collision. Great main event. The Rey Fénix match, you got to go out of your way to see. Just seeing the Grizzled Young Vets on this show was really, really cool. Got a title match, got Toni Storm, your women's champion wrestling. All around, thumbs up. If we're doing some sort of who wins the week, this week to me was a Collision week. But not a good week for SmackDown with the draft. But I am very hopeful that next week will be different.
Yeah, once we're through, I mean, it's the go-home show for Backlash. So it'll be a go-home show.
Indeed.
But then now that the rosters are going to be settled by May 6th, I think going forward there's some really interesting stuff to happen on SmackDown. And we're on the road to Double or Nothing. So
yeah.
Going to be fun.
It's an exciting time. So let us know what you thought of both Collision and SmackDown down in the comments below. And let us know what you thought of the draft. Who's going to be going where on Raw tonight? And who do you think should have maybe gone to the other show that was drafted on Friday? Let us know the answer to all those things in the comments down below. As always, make sure that you like this video. Give us a subscribe if you haven't already. Ring that bell to stay notified. We are going to be back tomorrow with our review of Monday Night Raw, the draft part 2. And we will have hopefully more to talk about.
Precisely nothing has been announced for the show other than the draft part 2. So I can't even give you a little preview, but we'll certainly have some things to say.
Yes, as we always do. But until then, I've been Tempest. That's been Dan. We thank you for another week of Smack-Lision, and we will
weekend
see
update.
You.
Weekend update. We've just established
this is a weekend update. I'm sorry. Smack-Lision, it sounds tasty.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.